Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Winspiration, the way to the essential. On UK Health Radio, Winspiration brings wisdom and information for an extraordinary future. Together, we can shape the world we want to live in. So let's get real and create the idea. Be extraordinary.
So, welcome to another episode of Winspiration Radio. And today, something what might astonish you, because we will talk about breathing and how to learn to breathe. And in my case, I'm breathing, I thought so at least, for 70 years. And now I'm going to learn, and I'm going to learn from this lady we have here today on the show, Barbara Tanze. She was born in Munich, grew up in Germany, lived in the US and in Switzerland, and studied a lot for more for vocal training, singing, and was more in the direction of artists. But then also, if I understood it right, more teaching about this and learn more and more and more, and went deeper and deeper into the breathing stuff, and we will learn what is so important. And I found her on the internet. She's living today in Slovenia, because I have a lot of what I call it just physical problems, but with physical problems, there are mental or spiritual problems, or spiritual problems via emotional problems, maybe to physical problems, we'll see. And I realized a lot of all those topics just based on wrong breathing. So I'm really excited also to learn for myself, and I guess you all can learn. So welcome, Barbara.
And
I'm so curious now to learn what I did all my life wrong, a little bit basic. I know I was typical mouse breathing, taking the breath through the mouth. Now, how can that be wrong? Or is there something what you like to add first?
Yes. Well, first of all, it cannot be as wrong, because you have been surviving with your way of breathing for quite a long time, right? So there's something that you're doing right, and maybe there's something that could be done in a more efficient way. I really try to stay away from those kind of labels of right and wrong. I like to speak more about efficiency, about, you know, how we can do something that is more functional, that is more adapted to our needs in a specific moment. So let's not try to think about wrong, but let's try to think
It's good that you say that's not totally wrong, but if I understand, I'm curious today also, if I have high blood pressure and a lot of other topics, topics sound so nice, really problems in my body, looks like it's all depending on the breathing.
Well, a lot of it is definitely depending on breath. I mean, let's just think about what breath means to our body. Mm-hmm. We can live for about a month without food, and we can live for up to a week without drinking anything, but we can only live a couple of minutes without breathing. So mm-hmm. there's definitely something very, very important about this. And there's basically a lot of different things that are being influenced by our breathing. Mm-hmm. So there is the mechanics of breathing. So which muscles, which structures are using in order to get the air in and to let the air out. Then there is the physiological part. So what is happening to the exchange of gases in our blood? What's with the pH value in our blood? What does that do to the functioning of our body? And then there's, of course, the nervous state. So how does the way we breathe, both mechanically and physiologically, how that influences our nervous state, or how our nervous state influences our breathing, because it's a total chicken and egg kind of situation. So, mm-hmm. Yes, breathing is, in a way, part of every single thing that we do, and more or less, or has more or less of an impact on whatever we do.
In preparing for session, and especially now, in 2 weeks we will meet in Slovenia, and I get more training. I don't know if this is the right word. But if I stay a little bit with wrong and right, so what is the best for my body? So I did not the best. I did what I call mistakes, because nobody told me how to breathe right. And what I learned now with the mouth breathing, it created a lot of problem. And I even asked my dentist, is it true that kids, if they are breathing through the mouth, getting the wrong whatever teeth set up, and then you need all these metal in the mouth, and you could easily avoid a lot of things, what is, let's say, not really natural. So, and then this way, I think it's really, really important. I just felt, oh, I did this again here. Yeah, just inhaling through the mouth, because I did it for 70 years. Yeah,
of course. And you know, again, sorry, I didn't.
Yeah.
And again, you know, mouth breathing is not in itself something that is wrong. There are situations when breathing through the mouth is completely functional and okay. So, for example, when we're speaking or when we're singing, and inhaling is maybe not even something that our body needs for survival, but it's something that it needs in order to create the sound. This is where sometimes breathing through the mouth can help us to inhale faster than if we did it through the nose and without making an additional noise. Mm-hmm. So there, breathing through the mouth is totally fine. And then there is one thing that if you did breathe through the nose, that would be really, really bad. And that is swimming. You know, when you're, and trust me, I used to be a competitive swimmer, and I still do triathlons. So I tried it, so you don't have to try it. Breathing through the mouth when you're swimming is just a much better idea, because inhaling through the nose with all the water around would make you inhale water.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not very comfortable.
Yeah.
So there are situations when breathing mouth is fine. Okay. So again, it's not so much wrong and right. It's about, you know, the right moment.
Yes.
The right timing for everything.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Agreed on that.
But I do agree that breathing through the nose, in most situations of life, just makes a lot more sense for our body. And I'm very, very happy, for example, to see that more and more parents have an awareness of this. And they bring me their children and they say, hey, Barbara, I noticed that my child is breathing through the mouth at night. Or I noticed that when she's sitting or he's sitting in front of the television, has the mouth open. And then we create strategies in order to help the child to realize that and to close their mouth.
Yeah, because if I understood it right, the natural way of breathing is through the mouth. That's what the body is made for, breathing through the mouth.
Absolutely.
So why do we lose it?
Well, it can have many, many different reasons. Usually it's something that happens from a certain situation. So, for example, just think you have a cold and your nose is really stuffed.
Mm-hmm.
So for a certain amount of time, a couple of days, depending on how long that takes, you know, your nose is kind of not the most comfortable way in for the air. Mm-hmm. And in those days, your body starts to get used to breathing through the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
This has a lot of different consequences for our body. But the first one is that when we have the feeling that we can't really breathe well, because through the nose is really difficult, mm-hmm. and we can breathe well or better through the mouth, we feel relief. Our brain feels more safe, because it's easier to breathe through the mouth. And this kind of false feeling of like having an easy way to breathe then creates a habit. Mm-hmm. And with that habit, for example, comes also a faster breathing frequency. So we're going to breathe faster. With breathing faster, our body will get less used to CO2 in the blood. So the tolerance of our body to to CO2 in the blood. So the kind of how much CO2 can build up in our blood before our body rings the alarm and says you have to breathe. This tolerance goes down, and basically then we have to breathe at that frequency that we used when we were breathing through the mouth. Now,
The CO stuff, but that is already what something was really astonishing for me, because everybody says, oh, oxygen is, and you take a deep breath, fresh air in the morning and everything. And it can, that's like the orange juice and the white bread in the morning. A lot of people believe it, but for most, it's not healthy. So it's, the problem is not really the oxygen, though it's even the opposite.
Yes. So the thing is that when we get used to this faster breathing frequency, we are used to lower levels of CO2 in the blood, and to go then from that back to a frequency that is slower. So where our body would have to get used to tolerating more CO2 because it takes longer to exhale it, is a process that we need to do consciously. Like it's very easy to lose that tolerance. It's not so easy to get it back. And so, and after those kind of episodes, you know, of having maybe allergies or maybe a cold, or sometimes it can also just be imitating somebody, you know, for children, they will just see their parents breathe through the mouth and then they will also breathe through the mouth, or their educators or teachers. So this can happen also through imitation. And then we get used to that and get used to it, not just mechanically, like breathing through the mouth, but like I was saying with the CO2, we also get used to it physiologically. So it's not just a decision for us to just say, oh, okay, now I close my mouth and I breathe through my nose again. But it has to be not only a conscious decision, but actually a training, retraining that CO2 tolerance of our body.
For sure, I believe in training, because like we said, that already it's different muscles. And if I didn't use them for 50 years, oh, for sure. I need to tell some muscles stop working, and others, oh, can I, get to work again? Yes.
Yes.
And you remember what was to do.
That is a different subject altogether. So CO2 tolerance and all of this is the physiology. So here we're talking about chemoreceptors that are constantly monitoring how much CO2 there is in our blood. When we come to the mechanics, so of course, again, breathing through the mouth or through the nose will also activate or recruit different kind of muscles. So, for example, in studies, it was found that breathing through the nose activates the diaphragm much, much more than breathing through the mouth. And another thing is that if we breathe through the mouth already when we are somewhere sitting, when we're calm, then when we do some sort of sports activity, when we get our heart rate up, when we actually need to increase the frequency of breathing because we need to turn over more air, well, if we already breathe pretty fast and through the mouth when we are in a calm state, then we don't really have a lot of buffer of where to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it really does make sense to kind of get used to, A, breathe through your nose when you're sitting somewhere calmly, or when you're, I don't know, eating, drinking, anyway, that's when breathing through the mouth really, really doesn't work. And then again, the next big chapter, and we're definitely going to have a look at that with you when you come to Slovenia, is the mechanics of breathing. So which muscles are working? What is happening? We have different groups of muscles that can help us breathe. Because again, breathing is so important for our body that our brain wouldn't just, you know, rely on one muscle or two muscles. Like there are many, many muscles that can help us breathe, but they're divided up into two groups. There are the primary muscles of respiration, which is mostly the diaphragm that I'm sure everybody has heard of, but many people don't really, really know where it is. So we're going to maybe discuss that later. The diaphragm and the intercostals. So those are the muscles that are between the ribs. Those are the muscles without which we cannot breathe. And it's really their only job. They have one job, and that is to make us breathe. And then we have a whole big amount of other muscles. They are usually muscles around the neck, any kind of muscles that is, that are attached to the rib cage from the outside of the rib cage, and they can help, they can assist the diaphragm and the intercostals when it's necessary. So, for example, when we run up a mountain and all of a sudden we need to breathe much faster and we need to pump out and in much more air per minute, then we will use those secondary muscles of respiration. However, again, just like for how mouth breathing can creep up on us just because we sometimes are in situations when it's not possible, breathing mostly with the secondary muscles of respiration can also creep up on us. It can be, you know, for example, if we have some extended periods of coughing where we feel like I have to use other muscles in order to get air in and in order to cough out whatever I have to cough out. And this creates habits again. Or it can be just the feeling of not being able to exhale fully. You know, many people have this, this feeling that they need to every now and then take like a big sigh, inhale to just kind of feel like they can really fill up, which usually is due to not being able to exhale fully, due to not relaxing the muscles after the inhale. And so those kind of habits during times of stress, it can happen to us that we feel like we need to control. We need to be sure that we're really breathing and we, you know, we're in this fight or flight mode and we just are in this tunnel where we have to control what we're doing, because if not, we feel completely lost. And all of this can kind of build up into having habits where we breathe with secondary muscles of respiration, even though that is not necessary. And that, of course, then means that the primary muscles of respiration, the diaphragm, the intercostals, they lose strength. Because in our body, it's you don't use it, you lose it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so we basically have a shift then from breathing with our primary muscles of respiration, which are super efficient. They're made for endurance. They're, you know, they're never tired. Well, not never, but they very, very, they don't get tired easily. And so then we switch to those other muscles, and it's not their primary action to help us breathe. You know, they basically, all the neck muscles that we have that connect to the ribs, that connect to the rib cage, those are primarily muscles that help to stabilize our head, move our head, turn our head, move our shoulders. And when the body starts to use those as primary muscles of respiration, this also gives a little bit of a dilemma for the function of those muscles, and also contributes, for example, in the kind of tension and pain that we might have around our neck.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's
a kind of chicken egg thing again. What was there first, the wrong breathing, and then the stress, so the tension and stress and that,
or a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah.
Well, it's a lot of topics already. I could ask a lot of questions, but I want to go to a kind of emotional with the deep breathing. When you said we created a habit, so I grew up, when I had stress or sorry as a child or whatever, pain or whatever, my grandma says, calm down, take a deep breath. So, and it's not only a sigh out, I should take a deep breath. And then I felt good. I don't know if it's really a kind of physical, emotional thing, because if I do it, I feel better, or was it just because grandma was there and with grandma it was better? And I learned one day that some people, not about breathing really, understanding that, but in connection with people who smoke, that a lot of people smoke and we have this, I need a break. And then, and they do the same mistake, but it feels like a break and no kind of emotional benefit or a feeling better. And that is then a big problem if this is wrong. You create something and manifest it with. Interesting, you're saying that breathing muscles never get really tired. So the opposite is, if you're too tired, you already need to check, are you breathing with the right muscles?
Yes, can be. I mean, this is a huge issue for athletes, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So athletes that have not done any specific breath training, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe whose diaphragm and intercostal muscles because they have never specifically trained them, are not as strong as the other muscles that they have been consistently training.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the diaphragm and the intercostals are completely weak or, you know, not at all, but they're just not completely balanced with the rest of the system.
Yeah, in my case, I just recently, I would say by accident, okay, subconsciously I was searching for it, got the information about the breathing. But I went to school where I had sports in school. I went to whatever doctors in my life, kind of other trainers I met. Nobody, not one, talked with me about breathing.
Yes, that is slowly changing. And I'm really, really happy about it. It's been, I've been in this breathing business for 10 years now. And over the last 10 years, a lot has happened. And I think it's going to continue. But still, if you talk to a lot of sports coaches, you know, they didn't receive any education about this. Many people still believe that breathing is something that just happens on the side. You know, you'll just train for whatever sports you train, and the breathing, it just develops. You know, it's kind of like they would take it like the heart. The heart becomes stronger if you do any kind of sports activity. But the diaphragm and the intercostal muscles are not the same kind of muscle like the heart, which is why they do get tired. It just takes them a very long time today. If not, that would be really, really bad. But they do get tired if we have sports activities and where other muscles then can take over and help.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of coaches,
short break, and then please repeat, because the connection, at least sure. I couldn't hear it. If you please repeat then after sure. short break, what you just said.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So, please again.
Absolutely. It's really, really, very important, actually, that they specifically train breathing and not just think that the breath will just follow along, you know. The diaphragm and the intercostal muscle are slightly different muscles than the heart. You know, the heart is made of smooth muscle tissue, so the heart really never gets tired. The diaphragm and the intercostals are skeletal muscles, striated muscles, like the butt. And this means that they can get tired. It's just that we do not get tired when we breathe calmly. So if we're sitting somewhere, or like, I don't think people usually get tired of breathing unless there is some sort of a pathology, but they can get tired, for example, if we do some high level sports activity. So we can have fatigue in our respiratory muscles. Mm-hmm. You know, if we really, really, really power them out, which is also a reason why we have so many other muscles that assist the diaphragm and the intercostals. And of course, training the diaphragm and training the intercostals means that we have more stamina and more power for endurance that we need for sports.
For me, it's also a thing what I just, but right, needed to understand is that it's 180 degree different than I thought before what breathing means. Because I grew up like grandma says, take a deep breath. Then in the morning, go to the window or on the terrace, take in. Yeah, so consciously, you need to take in. And then I saw whatever movies and emergency rooms where this kind of ball was just pumping And I thought, oh, you really need breathing means pumping. But if I got it right now, it's totally the opposite. We actually don't need really to breathe in normal life. If you're not just big athletes and competing, it's like more you have a kind of vacuum bag and open it, but oxygen is in. The main problem is more to learn to breathe out.
Well, if we look at it from like a purely anatomical and physiological view,
mm-hmm.
the inhale is the active part of breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to inhale, yes, it's true. There's like an under pressure in our lungs. So it is true that this helps us when we exhale completely, it helps us to inhale. But for inhalation, we do need some muscle power. And this is what the diaphragm does. The diaphragm is the muscle that contracts on the inhale. The intercostal muscles will raise the ribs a little bit on the inhale in order to create the space for the lungs to inflate. Mm-hmm. On the exhale, nothing needs to happen. There is no muscle that needs to participate in calm exhalation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So physiologically and anatomically, the inhale is the active part of breathing. Okay.
Okay.
However, because the diaphragm is a muscle that we cannot feel, we cannot feel it. It doesn't have that kind of nerve endings. We feel the inhale as if it was like nothing when we're not pumping, like you were saying, right? Mm-hmm. So it really feels like we're not really, really doing anything. Now, it is true that when we are under stress or when we are just living a lifestyle, you know, like many people are now, you know, running here and there and we never have time. And, you know, we live in such a psychological state, such a sympathetic kind of state where we are going to always be more worried about like inhaling than exhaling. And sometimes we actually forget to just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
So we forget to exhale.
Mm-hmm.
That can definitely cause problems for us. But it's basically really the fact that we are in that sympathetic state that kind of takes away a little bit from the natural coordination that we would have, which is the inhale is something active and the exhale happens by itself. Yes.
Exhale should happen by itself.
Yes.
Well, but that's what I need to learn now again. To do it consciously. Yeah.
Yes, because sometimes, you know, when we're so used to holding our breath,
mm-hmm.
like over inhaling, we lose the feeling of what it means to really exhale. And then we need to just learn it again and learn to trust our body and learn to trust that, you know, we can go a little bit further. We can let go a little bit more. And this in itself becomes quite a work. But it's not really muscle work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least the conscious decision. Yeah, yeah. But I learned already, like on the airport, if I have a computer bag and everything, I had some airports today with long ways to walk. So I had a little bit stressed, so out of breath. And just with the new information that exhaling is important, I didn't stop or try to inhale more. So just in this moment, just to focus more on exhaling. And astonishingly, it worked better. And that is a huge new concept and paradigm shift that with exhaling, it was easier for me, even if I felt I missed oxygen. Yeah.
Yes, because the exhale is attributed to the parasympathetic state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Exhale, your heart is also going to beat a little bit slower than on the inhale.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, so we're going to get into heart rate variability and all of this. I think also maybe when you come here to Slovenia, but yes, of course, you know, there pressure is happening differently in our rib cage when the lungs are full or when the lungs are empty. And this, of course, since the rib cage is being shared by the lungs and the heart, there is definitely an impact on the heart with whatever the lungs are doing. Mm-hmm. And what is happening with the end result is that on the inhale, the heart will beat a tiny little bit faster. And so we're talking about the inhale being something sympathetic, something that is more like exciting us. And the exhale makes the heart beat a little bit slower. And so we're talking about it as something parasympathetic. So something that calms us down. And yeah. So breathing yeah. exercises that are aimed at calming us down will always use longer exhalations.
Okay. That's what also anyway, the yogis are saying, breathe slower and you live longer. Yeah. Another topic, which I mentioned the diaphragm, which is one of my topics for a while. And I went to doctors, different, especially also the lung doctor, and they measured the volume of the lung, and with X-rays, they found out that my diaphragm, it says, is fixed. So for a few years, everybody tell me you need a surgery. Yeah. We need to get it down and or fix it somewhere or make an artificial one and everything. Now if I learn more, luckily I didn't do it. That is in any way a crazy thing. If you then fix it, then you don't have the muscle anymore, really.
I'm not a doctor. I'm not a surgeon. Yeah. I'm not a pulmonologist. So I will not be able to tell you a lot about those kind of things. I do think it's a very invasive procedure. You know, it yeah. really goes to the core of, you know, what your body is. So it can be very traumatizing. But, you know, this is really somewhere where I mean, I'm not a doctor. And so I will not be able to speak much to that.
Yeah, but what I learned already is, I mean, that's why for sure, and it's also nobody told me really, and then one doctor even gave me an off the training, what that's athlete using, and you need to inhale to fill the lungs. So it's just the opposite what I'm learning now. And like you said, also with the, I say wrong breathing, the diaphragm has no chance. So what nobody told me really the right way, and give your diaphragm a chance, maybe it starts moving again.
Yeah. So probably both are a little bit true, you know. So if your diaphragm is not moving well, this can have several reasons. You know, there can be, for example, it can be because of your ribs that are not moving. The diaphragm is basically attached to the entire lower rim of our ribs, and if the ribs are not moving, then the diaphragm cannot move. Mm-hmm. And that means that it just becomes weaker and weaker because it's not doing what it should be doing, which means contracting on the inhale and relaxing on the exhale. So from what I see, and I have worked also with people with COPD, so chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, what you see there is that creating more mobility in the rib cage basically frees up the possibility for the diaphragm to move again.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really about learning the entire coordination of what does it mean to, what does it mean for the diaphragm and the ribs to move on the inhale? What does it mean for them to move on the exhale? Where do we have the restrictions? You know, is it in the little joints that the ribs have with the spine? Is there maybe something happening in the spine that means that those rib joints cannot move anymore? Because, you know, a lot of us have some sort of degeneration on the spine. It's completely normal. It happens even to young people. But of course, the older we get, the more maybe small degeneration we have on the spine. And that has a huge impact on the mobility of the ribs. So it's a real systemic thing that needs to be looked at.
Yeah. Okay, well, that is a general problem with modern medicine. They pick just one part and not thinking the holistic thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they are very successful, you know, because they can, you know, they can pinpoint an issue, they can take care of it. And, you know, a good surgeon cannot be replaced by, you know, by anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think there is something where we can work together, you know, manual therapists and doctors, and just, kind of create whatever that patient or that person needs in that moment.
Yeah.
If that means to create an environment for the diaphragm so the diaphragm can move again, instead of maybe getting in there and cutting somebody open, well, then wonderful. If that is possible, then I'm all for it.
Well, at least it should be always the first option.
It should be should be an option, let's say that.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Maybe I have a little something else. Too strict in this, but in general.
I understand where you're coming from. But I think that we can all, you know, if we were all ready to kind of share our expertise and be open to whatever solutions are out there, as long as we have a certain evidence that this works and it's, you know, it's great. And we should all work together and share knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. But it starts with the education system. So the doctors study medicine. And if you look what they study, then you understand that they don't know it. And on those who know, it's just their personal interest, besides university, to learn it and figure it out. But it's the same, not only with doctors, so it's not about doctors.
I was on all around.
It's a general system. Look for symptoms.
Yes, we rely on people to just be curious and open-minded and creative and look outside of the box.
Yes. And what I also now learn with looking at the breathing stuff here, it's a lot of people who are not went through the system and got the certificate and belong to the club of doing whatever. They were just coming from different areas and looking for results, creating better results, and real natural results. And that is a totally different thinking to go there. And one simple advice I got is just sleep with a tape. So tape the mouth. So why is it that it helped me? And I heard now from others also that I started doing this. And then the first is, oh, can I first survive with it? Second, that does look not really sexy, and everything. And finding a good tape is a difficult thing because you have mostly have the chemical stuff then there. So, but why is it that just sleeping with a taped mouth makes you slowly, slowly feeling better?
If it does, like for some people, it makes them have panic attacks. So it's a person.
Okay.
And I just, as a disclaimer, you know, for anyone who's now, just, because it's important to really go with whatever is possible for your nervous system at a certain time, right? Mm-hmm. So for some people, it might be necessary to like tape the mouth maybe while they're watching a movie first, or actually lying down in bed, maybe on their back and kind of have the mouth taped, which can feel horrible to somebody who's really used to breathing through the mouth all the time. Mm-hmm. So like I said before, you don't use it, you lose it. And that is true for like the nasal passages and everything as well, right? If we don't ever breathe through the nose, all of those structures inside, they become, they will have less muscle tone. It will all become, well, less used. You can imagine it maybe a little bit. I'm oversimplifying, but like plumbing of an old house that hasn't been used for a long, long time. And maybe, you know, there's stuff that gets stuck and, you know, like raccoons will nest somewhere in a pipe. That doesn't happen to our nose, but you get the picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we tape our mouth, and that means that for our body, for our brain, there's no other possibility. If it wants to breathe, it will have to breathe through the nose. It's the only other way in.
Yeah.
And so in a way we are hacking, we're kind of forcing our system to go back to what is better for it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, for some people, it takes a little bit longer until they get to being able to tape their mouth the whole night. Some people can do it and they just feel great. Some people do it for a couple of nights, but they feel really tired. So it can happen that then they stop breathing for some time, which is also something that we don't necessarily want. So I would suggest to anyone who wants to try mouth taping, right, to have a thorough test first at the doctor's, like to see if there are any problems of like sleep apnea or any other issues that they might have in their pulmonary system, or maybe also in their nose, you know, things like having a deviated septum or like maybe one nostril that is completely blocked or something like this, and then to go try that. I mean, I can't keep anyone from just trying it by themselves. I'm just saying it's not as innocent as it looks sometimes.
Besides the mouse tapping, I understand the one advice is also learn to stop breathing for a while. Though there's some testing, what the Bolt test, or how often you need to inhale, or how long you can wait until the next inhale. Why is this so different? And it says if you can hold it longer or wait longer, not with stress, just naturally, then increase so you can health benefits, or the opposite. Mm-hmm.
So here we go back to what I said all the way in the beginning about CO2 tolerance. So how much CO2 is an acceptable level for your body right now? So you see, there's always about the same amount of oxygen around us. The air around us always has around 21% of oxygen, right? So this is not something that our body needs to worry about. Our body has very few receptors that actually gauge how much oxygen is in our blood at any given moment. It doesn't care so much about that. Mm-hmm. It cares about the CO2 because the CO2 is something that will change. You know, our body produces CO2 itself, depending on what kind of activity we're doing. If we're, you know, when we're sitting somewhere quietly, our muscles and cells are going to produce very little CO2. If we're running a marathon or, you know, running up a mountain or something like this, our body is going to create a lot more CO2. And so, of course, our body needs to have a way to kind of understand, ooh, CO2 is going up or CO2 is going down, because it needs to adapt how fast we need to inhale and exhale. And with that, of course, then also comes the heartbeat. So how fast does the heart need to beat in order to get the blood around the body to deliver oxygen and take CO2 out of the system? And so when we basically learn, when we teach our body, we train our body to withstand that little bit more CO2, it means that we can breathe a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. For example, that makes it then possible again to breathe only through the nose. It makes it easier for us to be calm, to be in a more parasympathetic state, to have longer exhales. And this, of course, is super, super beneficial for the entirety of our system, because in a parasympathetic state, this is when our body can do all those things like digestion, like, you know, calm digestion, or repairing our cells. All of those things are being put on hold when we are in a sympathetic state, you know, when we're in that kind of fight or flight state all the time. Mm-hmm. So this is the physiological explanation of why breathing is so, so important, and why it does make such a big difference if we're breathing 8 to 10 times per minute or 20 times per minute.
Okay, let's make a short break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, I guess everybody gets it. I for sure got it, that the way I breathe is so important and makes such a big difference how I feel, what health is, and they say even longevity. Like the yogis simply say you have energy or breath for 100 years. So breathing faster means you shorten your life, and slower, maybe you extend it. And even if it's just 10%, between 100 minus 10% or the plus, it's 20 years of life, what is incredible. So I didn't learn it. I'm now going after it to have a chance to extend a little bit more. But what is your advice? You're a mom. What are you doing with your kids? What is an advice or simple tips you can give to the audience?
My advice is observe your breathing
mm-hmm.
without judging it. So it's not, you know, when you breathe through your mouth that you say, oh, no, I'm doing it wrong. Because then we're getting even higher into that sympathetic state.
Yeah.
But it's more, you know, like kind of be curious and be interested in what your body is doing and then try to understand why it's doing it. Your body is trying to do one thing every single second of your life, and that is to keep you alive, you know? And so how it does that is just highly dependent on the decisions that you take in your life for the most part.
Yeah. Well, that's a very important thing, what you just mentioned somehow with the observer. You also really, really understand I am not my body. I have a body. So if I don't identify with it, then with the observing, I have a big step forward that I can, treat my body better.
And you can create a relationship with your body that is not based on judgmental kind of, you know, just saying, this is bad, this is wrong, this is, you know, this is ugly. But it's, hey, it's a relationship, you know, and in a relationship, there's always mutual work to keep that relationship going. Sometimes that means that I have to take a decision to protect my body, right? Because mm-hmm. my body is going to take the decisions to protect me in mm-hmm. whatever possibility it has. I'm not talking, of course, I want to take out, of course, certain diseases or something like this where, you know, we don't know why they come about and it's not your fault or something like this. But I think it is important that we are kind to our body and that we see that it's a lifelong relationship that we have and that we basically can't really get out of. So we might as well make the most of it and try to be constructive in it. So observe your breathing. And if you notice anything where you say, that's interesting, like, why am I doing this? Why am I holding my breath without noticing it? Why am I breathing through my mouth? Then you have such a huge opportunity now with the internet to kind of find out more about this. And of course, like with everything, there is good information and less good information on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, breathing is basically experimenting. So experiment. Try to see what makes you feel good. What does it make?
This is one thing I can go with and I can feel. I simply says, are my cells opening up or get more tension? And therefore, like I said, observing and not be it and then observe it. But I could observe years and years that I'm breathing through the mouth, but I didn't have the information that it's not the best thing I should do. So are there 1, 2, 3 important tips? Would you say, please observe that?
Yes. If you observe that you breathe with an open mouth, close your mouth and see if it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then repeat, you know, every time, like if that works for you, if you can just close your mouth and you see, that works as well. Mm-hmm. Then every time you observe yourself, you catch yourself breathing with an open mouth, close it consciously because your brain trains, your brain learns all the time. Doesn't matter how old you are. Your brain is always ready to learn something new. And basically, it has an interest in breathing through the nose, right? It's mm-hmm. something that it will realize that it's better. So mm-hmm. that's absolutely one advice that I would do. Then if you realize that you're holding your breath, it happens, you know, you're sitting at the computer and you're kind of like this. Okay, take just a moment and take a couple of breaths where you're consciously not holding your breath. So you take a couple of breaths where you're, for example, you count 1, 2, 3 in and 1, 2, 3 out. And you do that 5 to 10 times. Mm-hmm. And again, every time you catch yourself holding your breath unconsciously, do that. So it's those kind of little things that mm-hmm. you can get started with. And then if you find anything interesting about breathing, like a book or something, go read it. Go read the book. Go, I don't know, listen to the podcast. Go, watch the movie about breathing. So much information is out there right now on social media, on YouTube. And of course, there's always like information that has like not really. Yeah.
And there is Barbara.
But trust your guts. Like, trust your guts. Try it out.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. So you have finished already. And it says, yeah, and there is Barbara, and she has a website. We will have it here also mentioned. And we are not just here chatting online. So I know for people who can't go to Slovenia, you even offer online sessions. So who is interested in getting more information, or even kind of, is training the right word or to say this, or kind of education and
it can range from training through therapy to, you know, depending on what it is.
Yes. So don't hesitate if you're interested to contact her and figure it out. This little what I learned before, and maybe I can later tell you more. In 2 weeks, I have my physical sessions with her in Slovenia as well. But it's so important, like you said, people discuss food. And we know we can live for food for days, weeks without food. Some discuss water, but breathing is the most existential thing. So I hope you got some ahas, ideas, and if everything was not new, but then focus more on it. Breathing is so important. And thank you, Barbara, for this session. And listener, please be inspired and hear and see you in the next session.
Thank you so much.
This was another episode of Winspiration, Wisdom and Information to support you getting out of illusions, false identifications, limiting beliefs. We all have the power and potential to be more, do more, have more, give more. Reality is what is possible in the universe, and the best is yet to come. If you want to dive deeper into possibilities of creating the extraordinary future, go to winspiration.global or to wolfgangsonnenberg.com. More information and some free downloads like the email program Dream Goals Reality or a copy of the book The Best Is Yet To Come can be found on the UK Health Radio website under the Listen on Demand and Presenters section. Join us again next week on the Winspiration Show for more wisdom and information to create your extraordinary future.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.